Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about corruption in Africa. How serious is the fight against the scourge? And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Thank you very much.
You're very much welcome. We also have regular panelist, Suleiman Mgula, who joins us as usual from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and good evening, my colleague there, Vincent.
Good evening.
How is Durban?
Durban is fine.
That's very good to hear. Well, gentlemen, our topic tonight is corruption on the continent. Africa is widely considered among the world's most corrupt places, a factor seen as a contributing to the stunted development and impoverishment of many African states. Of the 10 countries considered most corrupt in the world, 6 are in sub-Saharan Africa, that's according to Transparency International. A 2002 African Union study estimated that corruption cost the continent roughly $150 billion a year. Now, for comparison's sake, developed countries give Africa $22.5 billion in aid. Now, Vincent, this is very interesting. You steal 150, then you beg for 22 million.
It is actually embarrassing when you think about corruption on the continent, because here you're talking about stealing from poor people. You get so many millions from foreign organizations. You get loans, and then you steal that money, and that money has to be paid later by the poor citizens of a country. And at the same time, you continue coming to the Western capitals to beg for more. And then as a consequence, while you're enriching yourself, you continue impoverishing your people by denying them certain basic services. There are no infrastructure being constructed, and countries either remain where they were, they get stunted, or they continue going back. The most shameful thing for me is the argument that many politicians on the continent give. They will tell you there is corruption also in the U.S. There's corruption in Europe. But then they do not explain the differences between the corruption that takes place in this part of the world and the corruption that takes place on the continent. In Africa, you're stealing money you don't have. You're actually taking the little that is being given by somebody else, by the West. But when you talk about corruption in this part of the world, it doesn't really threaten the daily livelihoods of citizens of this country. You may steal a little bit from a private company, and many times you're not really stealing government money. Most of the corruption that can be very serious involves the private sector, maybe somebody giving a bribe to a government official. So it is a shame, the nature and the extent of stealing that happens on the continent. I don't even enjoy the word corruption, because I feel like it, it in a way, it's just stealing. It is stealing. Those fellows literally steal from the poor citizens of the continent.
Your take generally, Suleiman?
I don't differ from what Vincent has said, actually. It is a shame to the continent that today, if we are to take the most serious disease on the continent, afflicting the continent, I think corruption has taken over from aid as far as the seriousness is concerned. Even by the fact that the AU itself had declared 2018 a year to fight for the struggle against corruption shows you that it is at crisis level. As Vincent has said, most of our countries have been stunted basically because of corruption. There is nothing else. The ravaging unemployment we are going through, the ravaging poverty we are going through, the ravaging inequality we are going through cannot be sorted out unless we sort out the issues around the corruption. Because, as Vincent has said, the money is here, but the money is lost through corruption. We don't even need aid, because what we get in aid is half of what we lose. So What is the issue? The issue is that it is a very serious problem. We need to tackle it. We need to solve it. And if we don't, the countries are being stunted and the people, the poor, are becoming poorer. The inequality gap is increasing. The unemployment is increasing. And the country, the continent is slowly by slowly drifting towards a crisis as far as I think we are concerned.
I see. Gentlemen, what's very interesting is that in Africa, corruption doesn't, it's not among the poor countries. The biggest economies on the continent, that is South Africa and Nigeria, are no different from the poorest like South Sudan and Chad and Central African Republic. Even a country like South Sudan, which was the poorest among the poorest and the youngest on the continent, the money was looted left and right until they had almost nothing left. What makes it such that the thing is so rampant across the board?
I have, so many, I can give a few thoughts on that. First, I think there's a culture of idolizing material
stuff,
gain,
yes,
regardless of how you get it. People who have money are respected. Without
question,
how they got their money doesn't count. Such that even if you go to the poor villages, you come to the village with a bag of money, they will line up.
Yes.
And gladly take some handout from you, when actually you stole all this from them. This was money that was meant to build them hospitals, it was meant to build them a road, but they will be dancing for you just so they can receive a few coins. There is that, and then there is a kind of a lost sense of morality, where people who call themselves self-respecting leaders, who go to church and mosques, have stolen millions and billions and build themselves palatial homes, and their families live large, and they come shopping abroad, and they have no shame, because they feel like this is part of a culture of a person who is in the system. So if you come up, become a member of parliament, you're a minister, you're a senator, you're a governor, it is supposed to be synonymous with amassing a lot of wealth, only that this wealth does not have to be something you sweat for, but it's something you just take. And that has become something to be glorified. And it's only enough, I don't know how it is in other parts of the world mostly, but certainly it's not here in the US, but it's very common on the continent that the wealthiest people in society now are people in politics, are people who have served in politics, or people who are very closely connected to the politics of the country. And so how do you explain that a poor country should be a source of immense wealth for politicians, when actually ideally governments are not as wealthy as,
private sector.
As the private sector? But for us, the source of money, the source of easy money, is a government, which many times relies on taxes of the people and, of course, foreign aid. And yet that is the source of this wealth that we are seeing awash among many politicians across the continent.
I think, Suleiman, you'd agree with that, because even your own country, South Africa, it doesn't get a clean bill of health. And then there are places where very distressing people even are dying, people like countries like South Sudan, as I mentioned. You see the few leaders, the few politicians, building houses in other countries, splashing around dollar bills, and then the other people are starving, literally.
First of all, after the collapse of the communism, capitalism was ushered on the front page. So from then, after the end of the Cold War, capitalism is idealized. In other words, the free for all. When you are rich, as Vincent has said, you are idealized. Number two, 90% of the leadership which we have on the continent, the leaders themselves, they are corrupt themselves. So, like the fish, it rots from the head. Now, once the leader is rotten, then the whole system is rotten. That is what we are facing in Africa. Number three, corruption in Africa has got, it is both local and internationalized. We have got international syndicates we have got our friends from Asia who came in like a syndicate. Like now in South Africa, the problems we are facing, the state capture problems which we are facing, it is an Indian family which came in like a cancer and it ate through the government system and brought it to its knees. The whole country now we are facing shortage of electricity. Everything is pointing towards the Indian Gupta family, which penetrated the government system and corrupted it during President Zuma's reign and almost put every system under its knees. I think even in East Africa, such cases have happened. For example, I think in Uganda, there are Indian families which penetrated government and put them under its knees. You find a country like Uganda went down on the knees of the Sudhirs and other Indian families. What we are facing in South Africa today was faced by other countries in Africa like Uganda. They went on their knees because of these international syndicates. Not only the Indian, but even other people from the European countries. You find syndicates come from through all sorts of ways. In the development assistance which we get, there are syndicates which are corrupt. In the investments which they bring, there are corruption syndicates in there. Then we have got the international syndicate in illicit flow, as we have said, which also is a branch on its own. For example, as we talk, East Africa had been invaded by, actually for a long time, it has been invaded by foreign exchange or money laundering problems. They are almost crippling the economy in East Africa, the money laundering through forex bureaus. So these are international things. That is why it is not restrictive. It is taking big countries, small countries, because it is well organized and it has penetrated our society, especially given that the leaders have been penetrated first, then you are left with nothing at from top to the bottom.
Yeah, talking of I'll allow to continue, but his point there was very interesting.
Yes.
Talking of internalizing corruption, there are places like in Uganda where they have the most expensive road in the world. They built a road at the highest rate ever in the world. And then now they are planning to build a hospital, not a government hospital. Yeah. They are planning to commit money to a so-called foreign investor, close to $500 million, to build a hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which money could have been put into the health system and maybe would have done better.
Yeah.
But you go ahead.
Yes, what I wanted to say is, see how humiliating it is, I think, to the citizenry of the continent that you can actually have your country taken over by even some external forces. How do you explain that some two fellows can come from India, for example, and get into South Africa, steal your own money, and corrupt you with your own money? I mean, it's your wealth. It is the wealth of your nation. How do you have some fellow coming in and using the wealth of your own nation to control you, to make you their puppets such that you serve their interest? That explains itself this way, that so many of our politicians are desperate to get as wealthy as they can possibly get, and sometimes they don't have the idea. So they get these fellows who know how to play the system and who literally make them their stooges and help them. They make you facilitate their stealing, then they give you a little bit of what they have stolen. And now you can go across the continent, you can go to East African countries, West African countries, and the biggest question is, how is it that an African politician can shamelessly invest abroad, buy houses in the United States, or have homes in Australia, and yet in his own country, he cannot even afford, he cannot even go to a hospital in that country. He has to go to a different country to be treated.
That's right.
Yet he's spending millions to invest in homes abroad. What is going on in the mind of that person? Do you believe in your country? Do you believe in the future of that country? If you cannot invest in your own country, but you're willing to spend money that you've taken from your country in a foreign country, in fact, in a developed country, It is embarrassing.
Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're talking about corruption in Africa. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst in South Africa. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Now, unfortunately, corruption in Africa ranges from high-level political graft, as most of you have pointed out, on the scale of millions of dollars, where some African presidents are among the richest in the world, to low-level bribes to police, for instance, police officers, customs officials, every office worker you go, they want some money. Now, while the political graft imposes the larger direct financial cost to the country, these petty bribes have a corrosive effect also on the basic institutions. Mm-hmm. So now it appears the whole society is going off track. What do you take?
You know, if I may come in first. First, it has created a culture, of corruption. Now, when you use the word culture, it means it is an acceptable way of life,
yes,
which becomes an identifier of people.
Mm.
Society has become identified with corruption in the sense that everybody has come to believe that whatever you do, wherever you work, whatever activity you're engaged in, you should use that to make some money,
yes,
even if it means you're doing it illegally, but you justify it. There's an expression in Kenya they used to say, if I may say it in Swahili, they used to say, unakula mahali unafanya.
Yes.
You know, you eat where you work.
Man, it is where he
yes.
works.
So if I work at an office and you come in, you want a birth certificate, I'll tell you, you know, you need to give something else.
Yes.
As if I'm not paid a salary for that.
Yeah.
But I justify it by saying, look, my boss takes more.
Mm.
He takes bigger bribes.
Mm.
If it's a police officer, I'll say, well, if I don't take something here, my boss is taking even a bigger bribe.
Mm.
So that now, because they're taking the cue from the leaders, Mohula said the fish rots from the head.
Mm.
They take the cue from the top leaders of the country. And you tell yourself, so-and-so was a nobody.
Mm.
Then he became a minister and a prime minister and vice president. And today he's a millionaire, he's a billionaire.
Mm.
Who am I to try to pontificate about, you know, values and morals, and I'll continue staying miserable and poor? So people start accepting this as part of their culture.
Yes.
And then it becomes a rot in society. That's what's happening. And after Mohula chimes in on this, I'd like us to talk about something they'll always accuse us of, that they are fighting corruption and we never talk about that.
Except that this is very dangerous, this corruption. For instance, I was watching a documentary in South Africa where policemen were conniving with the drug dealers, these who sell in Nyaope. Is it Nyaope?
Yeah.
So people are getting people's lives are getting destroyed, but because the policemen are being bribed, they turn a blind eye and they keep collecting money. There are people who work in immigration, for instance, in African countries, who are selling passports. And anybody comes with the money, you just build. So it can even be dangerous. So, Mugula, things are not moving in the right direction.
Number one, political corruption.
Mm.
Equatorial Guinea. There comes the president, he appoints his son a vice president. And the son is free to root the country openly. Angola, Santos, appoints a daughter, appoints a son to be in charge of strategic sovereign fund assets. They loot to their maximum. Unashamedly. Rwanda. Young girl competes with the president. All the businesses are rounded up for the family. They are literally destroyed. Uganda. You compete with the president. Your bank is closed without any regard. The judicial system is skewed. The legal framework within the system, whether it's the financial system, is all skewed or is all overridden. In broad daylight, someone just rings the phone. Recently in Uganda, there was an investigation about the closure of the banks.
Mm-hmm.
the investigation itself, because of the inherent weakness within the system, avoided the elephant in the room that the bank governor was well aware, all the officials were well aware of what is happening. You cannot say the bank governor was not aware that banks were being closed, that someone, only one official, rang the phone and closed the bank. No.
Actually, they closed the bank using WhatsApp message.
All the officials were aware. The order came from somewhere high, and it ordered that let those banks be closed at the behest of the people in authority. So the judicial system is perverted. Then from there, the parliament itself, it makes laws which are a shame to the people. Look at the taxation system. For example, in some countries, on the social media. Yeah. So every system is perverted from the top. And then if the big man? Okay, let's go back again. Uganda. The president of the country appoints his wife a minister. He appoints his son, head of the army.
And
such political corruption is so evil, is so immoral, that it leaves the whole society rotten.
And don't
blame the small man who takes a bribe at the police post.
In fact, most of this, if you look at how they live and how they what they earn, it's absolutely... shameful to a country, but you can see the motivation for them to try and get something because they know how those who are high up in power are benefiting from the system. But somebody out there will say, well, you disparage African countries and yet we are fighting corruption, we have anti-corruption units. Truth is, there is no, I haven't seen a very sincere effort to eliminate corruption. Even in countries where leaders are speaking so loudly about eliminating corruption, because they do not have in place, in position, the systems. And some have done this for political expedience, first to maybe target their enemies or sometimes just to pacify the citizens. But the truth is, I come from Kenya, and for many, many years of my adult life, there have been massive scandals where billions of dollars have disappeared. There will be talks about the corruption. It will be known that the money was stolen. It will be acknowledged that it was stolen. Fingers can be pointed to certain directions, but I will challenge any high-ranking official in Kenya to show me when was a high-ranking government official who was implicated in corruption arrested, jailed, and the monies they stole
recovered.
When did that ever happen? It is one thing to go out there and talk as loudly as you want, have this thing in the media, claim that we are investigating. Sometimes people are taken to court, in fact, or some committees to give testimonies and all that. Truth is, the corruption starts at the very top, and there are too many people who are involved in this system, in the corruption, including those who are investigating, including those who are ideally supposed to take action against this, such that it fizzles out after some time. In Kenya, an example is scandal after scandal after scandal. After some time, all that has fizzled out. Nobody was held accountable.
But again, why we're about to wind up the program. Why do people not consider the consequences of this? One of them is poverty. The rampant poverty on the continent is a result mostly to this corruption. Some of it is even... I don't know how to describe it.
I disagree. Poverty is not a motivation for corruption.
No, I'm saying
corruption is a result.
That's what I'm saying.
It leads into poverty. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
The corruption at the highest level, where monies
leads
are stolen
poverty,
that were supposed to help the citizen, leads to poverty.
Correct. That was the point I'm trying to make.
Exactly.
At some point, for instance, there's a country where they got funds from, I think, from the UN for measles, HIV. And was stolen by some few guys, some ministers and who, at the expense of the deaths of these people involved. So as we summarize, how do this impact of corruption on the continent, how does it get mitigated? Let me begin with Suleiman. What should be done to stop it? Because the consequences are really serious.
Number one, you cannot have a thief. A thief cannot what? listen, tell me.
You can't send a thief to catch a thief.
You can't send a thief to catch a thief. Thank you very much. You can't send a thief to catch a thief. So long as there is no rotation of leadership in any in a given country, there will be no end to corruption. Unless we get a new set of leaders in a country, unless there is, it is only after Buhari had come in that Goodluck Johnson and all the corrupt systems under his regime began to be investigated. It is only after George Weah has gone in that we are looking at Salifu's regime. The same in Sierra Leone. So every after rotation and let's say an opposition comes in, whenever there is a rotation, there is an attempt. Mm-hmm. But so long as a regime like those ones in Uganda, 30 years, in Equatorial Guinea, 30 years, in Cameroon, 30 years, all those rotten regimes, so long as there is no rotation, they cannot investigate themselves. No matter whether they sign the African Convention on Corruption, United Nations on Convention on Corruption, however much they shout, however they grandstand, they won't do anything because the system is rotten from top to bottom. Until when someone comes and investigates them and it imprisons them and makes them to vomit those ill-gotten wealth. This is when we shall make a move towards corruption. Otherwise, without any change in leadership and government, we should not expect anything good.
Okay, my concluding words will be, first, as Mohola is saying, there has to be an institution. We have to focus, in fact, any new leadership on the continent should focus on creating very strong institutions and, if possible, try to learn from the U.S., try to learn from Europe. How do you make sure everybody is held accountable? It should be impossible for one shilling, one naira, one rand to pass from one person to another without a system that monitors it to make sure that none of that money goes out without proper authorization for the intended purpose only. How do you end up stealing millions and millions from every department, from every ministry, and you only come to learn later? There is no system of accountability. There has to be institutions that are strong, that also hold everybody accountable, that are also foolproof in the sense that you should not have a system where one person or two people can easily collude to sign off money. It should be made so difficult that to release one dollar from any department, it should pass through so many systems and so transparently that nobody can steal any money.
Well, out of time, but unfortunately some people have pointed out because of this corruption and this culture of corruption, that's why the leaders in some of these countries don't want to go away, because, as Mgula says, they will be investigated, they will be held to account, so that one is, it's like a chicken and egg. You steal, you don't want to leave because then you'll be caught or you'll be held to account. So you stick there and protect yourself and your clan and your wives and family so that you can, the thing keeps on and
it's
on
a shame.
And on.
It's a big shame.
It's a terrible shame. So I think we'll revisit this issue of corruption on the continent, because it's causing havoc. People are dying because of this. And the poverty that is rampant on the continent is caused by this, what some call theft, actually, to be fair. Well, gentlemen, we are out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Vincent Makori, my colleague, host of Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, our producer tonight was Jackson Mvunganyi, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. Until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, wishing you all the best.
Thank you.
This is VOA News. I'm